there. Great day, everyone. You know, until a few years ago, I never paid much attention to what they call imposter syndrome. I heard about it and I was just kind of like, oh, well, okay, maybe. But then I started thinking, well, isn't imposter syndrome just a bit of a lack of confidence? Isn't that what imposter syndrome is? Or is it really more? Is this something we need to dive deep into? Or is it something that we can just patch up and be on our way? So today's show is dedicated to anyone that has ever felt like their achievements were not enough, that they did not belong, anyone that has ever felt like maybe they were a fraud and didn't quite belong at that seat at the table. Well, we're here to tell you that you do belong at that seat at the table, and we are going to break it all down to you today for you today as we prepare to lead above the grind. Let's get started. Great day, everyone. We are so happy to be back for another episode of the Coffee with Rhonda show, where we are your cup full of inspiration, revelation, and wit for today's savvy leader. So today we are on, this is episode 7, and this is season 7 and episode 85. So, man, we're going to get to that 100 mark soon. We got to start playing. All right. So as we get started today, I want to thank everyone for tuning in. Before we get started, we know that there's always a couple of asks, whether you're watching live on a replay, listening later on podcast, please be sure to visit our YouTube channel and subscribe, and also to share, because there is something in this conversation today that there will be someone out there who needs to hear that message. So please share it with others. So with all that being said, my name is Rhonda Y. Williams, and I am what I like to call an RSOL, or a recovering stressed out leader. Today, I believe we have to modernize our view of leadership to include a more aware, well-being centric leader who is able to be more effective and more efficient while still taking care of themselves. If you wanna learn about the work we do in the world, you can visit www.abovethegrindleadership.com, abovethegrindleadership.com. So that's a little bit about me. Today, I have my cup that says be awesome today and every day. I figure, you know what? We're talking about imposter syndrome. I'm awesome. You're awesome. Let's be awesome today and every day. So let's introduce our wonderful co-host, our caffeinated co-host, before we get to our special guest for today. So Roz, great day to you.
Good morning. It's so glad. I'm so glad to be back, and my picture is clear. Look, no technical problems. It's exciting.
It's the little things in life that make us happy, right, Roz?
Okay, yeah. I don't need $1 million check. I just need technology to work. That's all. Because you know, this season has been a rough season for us when it comes to connectivity. But nonetheless, I'm Roz Jones, the CEO and owner of Jacksonville's Best Caregivers, where we help expand the life of your loved one. Why do I do it? I do it to help the caregiver to reduce that SOS on their journey, which is being stressed, overwhelmed, and providing safety and security. When you can't do it all, you give me a call. And today I am drinking 10.0 alkaline water.
Oh. All right, Roz, you got me already. As we're starting the show, I'm already feeling like a little bit of an imposter. You got alkaline water. I got coffee in my cup. Okay.
Look, the alkaline water. If you're not ready, you need to be close to the boardroom when you drink the water. That's all I'm going to say.
Thank you. Thank you for that, for that public service announcement. Awesome. Thank you, Roz. Marae, good evening to you.
Hello. Good morning to everyone. Evening on my side. Marae tuning in from Perth, Australia. And I am the greatness engineer. And what I do as a greatness engineer, I help you unlock your greatness and unleash your, you know, your highest potential so that you can, perform at the highest level. So that's Marae today, Kima. And today I'm drinking green tea. So I'm not getting close to Rose. She does.
Stay far away.
So welcome everyone.
thank you. Great day to you, Marae. And we want to welcome our special guest to the coffee table. Welcome Ali. Thank you so much for joining us. We're super excited to have you and all of your knowledge and wisdom on this topic with us. So tell us a little bit about who you are, where you're based, and then tell us what you have in your cup.
Okay, well, thank you for having me. I love the introductions. I feel like very much at home, and this is the right place for me because all of your philosophies deeply resonate with me. So I'm so happy you asked me to be on the show. I'm calling in from Ottawa, Canada, which is the capital of Canada. Maybe not everyone knows that. People probably think it's Toronto. I'm actually originally from Toronto, but I just recently moved to Ottawa. Who am I? Okay, so I am an imposter syndrome coach, and I've been doing that for just over a year and a half. I spent my entire career in the corporate world, having a pretty celebrated career in sales. I worked at companies like Salesforce. I worked there for 8 years and other kind of tech startups, so heavy into the tech sales space. But about maybe 9 years ago now, I found coaching at a time in my career when I was really not performing very well. I was couldn't figure out how to get out from the bottom of the dashboard, and I'm quite the hyperachiever. So if I'm not achieving, I'm beating myself up and I'm telling myself that I suck, right? So I needed to figure out a way to stop doing that because I didn't know how at the time. And so I found a coach, and she really taught me how to trust myself, how to understand and decipher, you know, my negative self-talk and the negative mindset that was keeping me in my self-fulfilling prophecy of not doing well, right? If you believe that you're not going to do well, well, then you're going to kind of not take the right actions to do well. And then you're not going to do well. And you're going to be like, see, I didn't do well. So that was what was happening to me before coaching. And then after coaching, I became the number one rep on my team. I hit 150% of my quota, which is very hard to do at Salesforce. And I was absolutely convinced that coaching is a magical thing, and that I wanted to spend my life being a coach. But it took me like 8 years to make that dream come true. I stayed at Salesforce, like I said, for quite a long time, and then I left and went to a startup. But then a year and a half ago, it was actually Jim Carrey's commencement speech. Are you familiar with that, the one that he did at the I can't remember the university now, but very kind of spiritual university. And he said, he told a story about his dad, who was an absolute hilarious man, could have been a great comedian, but chose the safe path out of fear. He was an accountant, which is the opposite of fun and funny, right? And then he got fired from that safe job, right? And they, you know, kind of fell into poverty. And so Jim goes on to say that he learned many lessons from his father. One of the biggest one being that you can fail at what you hate, so you might as well try at what you love. Ooh. And there was like this just aha moment in when I was watching that, even though I had seen it before. It's like, you know, you're ready to hear a certain message at a certain time. Like I had heard it before, but then I was watching that 2 years ago now. And I was just like, I can't keep doing this. I can't stay denying myself of my dream of being a coach. And so a few weeks later, I went into my boss and quit, and then immediately started my coaching journey as an imposter syndrome coach. Yeah.
Wow. That's very cool. So That quote is so powerful. Mm. You can fail at what you hate, so you might as well try what you love. Oh my goodness, that is just fantastic. Okay, so before we get into that, you're in Ottawa, Cam. What do you have in your cup?
Okay, so it's kind of funny what I'm drinking. So first of all, I have my A cup for Allie, okay, right? Which is cute. But I'm speaking of imposter syndrome, I'm drinking imposter coffee because it's basically a coffee substitute. So it's not coffee, but it tastes like coffee. And it's like a dandelion root blend. I don't know if you've ever heard of this. I'm probably the first person on the show to drink this, but it's
dandelion. Like, is it dandelion?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I had one before coming to the show. So, hey,
there you go. Right. Yeah. But it's imposter coffee because it's black. Okay. It looks like coffee. It kind of smells like coffee, but it's not coffee.
Awesome. So we're all on the imposter train today. So we are right where we need to be today. So let's dive into this. Before we do, let's say good morning to a few folks out there. Michael's out there. Michael says, good morning, ladies. Rock the screen. Hey, Michael, it's always good to see you. Regina's out there in Austin, Texas. She is coffee, and it's a pleasure to be here. My mom is out there also. Mom, good morning to you. Excited for another great show. She's drinking hot chocolate with cinnamon and ginger. Great to see Roz today. Roz, mom says it's good to see you. let's see. Victoria is also with us. Hi, Victoria. Great to see you. Espresso Roast Starbucks. I'm really excited that you're here, Victoria, to participate in this conversation. It's going to be a good one. And then someone on Facebook is saying, hey, ladies. I hate when the name doesn't show up. I just am like, some Facebook person is like, hey, ladies. And then I have water in my cup. Okay. They might also be joining for a group, which I know Facebook from groups does not allow showing of names. Mm-hmm. Imposter syndrome. So let's dive into this imposter syndrome and talk a little bit about it. So let's talk first about what it is, and then we'll do that at a pretty high level. But then I also want to see if there are any stories that we have that we can share, because stories are really powerful. And as I was thinking about this, I thought of my own personal story of imposter syndrome, and I didn't even know what it was. But as I look back on it now, I was like, oh my goodness, I have imposter syndrome. It's one of those aha moments things. So let's first talk about what imposter syndrome is. And if you've got personal stories out there, you're in the audience or you're out listening, share that with us as well. Roz, what about you? When you think of imposter syndrome, what does that mean to you? And then have you had any personal experiences with it?
I guess for me, because I'm in the healthcare industry, most of the people don't look like me that own the businesses. Mm. And so the imposter syndrome for me was fear, procrastination, and lack of confidence.
Yeah.
Because when I would walk into a client's house or wherever I was, they always asked me for my credentials, for my IRS number, for my insurance. And when I used to work for my competition and I would go in and do the same type of assessments, they never asked for that. And I finally decided to, you know, I said, my next client, I'm not even walking. I normally walk in with my book because I'm already prepared for the question. And this time when I walked in, I think it was because the way I was postured, I had a different mindset. I said, I am not going in with this book. I'm not going to belittle myself. I don't think I should have to do that. And for years that mentally bogged me down, because walking, I knew I could get the client. Trust me, that wasn't even, I wasn't even worried about that. But those initial questions, do you have the EIN number? Are you certified? Do you have insurance? Are you bonded? You know, do you do background checks? Do you, I'm going to go ahead and call out. You didn't ask Home Instead that when I was working for them, or Visiting Angels. You didn't ask any of them that.
Right.
But you're going to ask me. And so part of it, like I said, it was fear, procrastination, self-doubt. And then I said, well, is it because I'm Black or a small business? I don't know. But that one day, just that one day, when I decided I'm going to pull my shoulders back, I've never had to go in with a book again.
Wow. Roz, that is really a powerful story. And you have to get to that point, right? So first, Murray, let's go to you. And then Ali, I want to come to you after Murray, and I want you to get wrap this up for us in terms of what really is it that we're dealing with when, and Victoria's question, she says, you know, is imposter syndrome, is it good, bad, or mess? So we're going to talk about that also, Victoria. Mm-hmm. So Murray, first, talk to us about your experience with imposter syndrome.
So my experience with imposter syndrome came in actually when I entered the energy sector, when, you know, I was working with people who didn't look like me. Mm-hmm. And the second thing is most of the, you know, the guys that I was working with, they were coming from very prestigious university. Mm-hmm. And I was coming from a very small university in France. So I felt like I didn't belong. I was scared, and I already had my list of excuses to say I'm not going to succeed. And it was really hard because you start to beat yourself up without even them starting to challenge you. So you're already going with such a low self-esteem and not really being positive about anything. And I actually managed to turn down, but because of one of the women, an American woman who was working there, who actually coach me and gave me all this confidence to tell me you're here. I mean, you're starting, you're here to learn. There's nothing to fear. Just do what you have to do. So I really had to have this lady to push me and to really help me to start really believing in myself and just being myself really and delivering to the level that was required. So it was quite a difficult experience.
Wow. So thank you for sharing that, Murray, because when you are in, like, you are a woman in a very heavily male dominated industry, right? So that in and of itself, but then you also had sort of the college, right? And thinking why I didn't go to the right schools and all of that can really play on your psyche. So Ali, break down for us, what is this imposter syndrome and then you can react to anything else that's been shared.
Yeah, those are perfect examples that I will definitely kind of give you my take on. But first, let me talk about kind of the clinical definition, if you will. And then I'll also tell you a little bit of my own personal definition from all the work that I've done with clients and how I see it manifest. So the original study that even created this terminology of imposter syndrome was done in the 70s. And it was originally done only on women, which is one of the reasons why typically people think it's a woman's issue. So the definition that came from this study is persistent thoughts of inadequacy despite evidence of success, right? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of like the formal definition, right? And what I heard in both of your stories is this feeling of people don't look like me here, right? Which the minute I hear that, what I hear behind your words is this longing to belong, right? So imposter syndrome is really underneath it all, this deep down need that we all have to feel like we belong, right? Because when we belong, we feel safe. Think back to like when we're in tribes way back in the day, like you need to belong to the tribe in order to be safe, right? So it's literally an animalistic survival need that we have. And so what we tend to do when we want to feel safe and belong is then look at the crowd, right? Look at the people that are in this crowd that feel like, you know, what you want to be in. And you then start to try to look and act and say and speak like them, right? Which then literally does make you also feel like an imposter, right? Because you're not actually being yourself, right? You're trying to fit into this group, right? And again, so coming back to like the not seeing people that look like you. So that's another reason why the imposter syndrome has been kind of touted as a women's issue, because there are still so many, I mean, listen, we live in a patriarchy, like no one's arguing that, right? And there are still so many industries where women don't hold high titles. So here you are, you know, you're young in your career and you want to progress your career, but no one like you, even your gender, is the CEO or is a VP. Like, so how are you to believe? You don't have any, your brain has no evidence to say that that's possible, right? Mm-hmm. And so then you can develop this belief that it's not possible. But we often internalize that belief to mean it's not possible because I'm not good enough, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I heard that in kind of both of your stories, Mireille, you know, then you started thinking, I didn't go to the right school, right? I wasn't smart enough to go to the right school, or I didn't make a good enough decision to go to the right school, whatever it might be, right? And Roz, you know, people were kind of acting towards you as you might not have, right? And then there's a part of both of you that believed a little bit of it, right? Even though you were like, you know, no, I should be here. But deep down subconsciously, you were like, they're kind of reinforcing this deep down self-doubt that I have. And then you're back in the vicious kind of cycle, right? The self-fulfilling prophecy, until the moment, like you, Roz, when you were like, no, like I'm going to keep getting these objections if I keep believing that these objections are true, right? The second you were like, first of all, they're not true. And I'm not even going to let them be true. So I'm not even going to bring my book, right? And all of a sudden, people just started acting differently towards you. Nothing changed. Your credentials did not change. The choices you made in your past did not change. The only thing that changed was actually how you felt about yourself, right? Oh. And so that is the work that I really do with my clients, right? So it is really about restoring back to kind of your core self, right? Without all this external influence that we have in our lives, right? This external programming that we have in our lives that says, you know, you're only acceptable and successful if you have X amount of money and this title and all these things, a car and a this, right? Screw all that. Take that out of the picture. Who are you at your core, right? And confidence, the word confidence means to know the truth of something, to be so certain about the truth of something. So what I help people do, what I help my clients do, is be so certain of the truth of who they are, right? Mm-hmm. At their core, what they value, what their strengths are, their natural talents, their natural abilities, which it sounds like, Roz, that's exactly kind of what you tapped into in that moment, to be like, shoulders up, right? I have a dog, right? So I'm always like, I'm the leader, right? It needs to know that I'm not scared, but it's true. Like if I'm distracted and I'm not paying attention, I'm just kind of it'll take advantage. And the second that I'm like, no, this is how we're doing things, he's like, okay, all right, I see what's happening here. So it is your energy, right? But you can't fake energy. You have to actually do the work, the inner work, the inner healing to truly believe those things about yourself, right? Truly believe that, you know, your strengths and everything that matters to you is important. Sorry, I'm turning off because it's hot.
Yeah, no, I think though, so many pieces in there for us to pay attention to. And I think in particular, the fact that it's our choice, right? Mm-hmm. We can own it or not. We mm-hmm. can choose to compare ourselves to others or not. I want to pause for just a minute because I found something and then I want to come back and get everybody to react to this. Michelle Obama was talking about imposter syndrome. And I think this is a really good clip for us. Before I do that, let me just check in with a couple of people because Victoria said, in today's world, I often find out that having imposter syndrome is the only way to survive to advance, particularly for neurodivergent people. I struggle with this as people will say, you've got an accent. And then wanting to feel like I belong, I've mastered my English language. I love that you brought it back to that feeling of belonging because I think that's what's resonating with Victoria here, Allie. Michael said, I used to be Darth Vader as a leader of teams and I had to change that. After successfully becoming a dynamic leader, I still would fall back to Darth Vader style for short periods when chaos required it, but it should never be the first choice style or sustained for very long. So you're speaking to Michael, the ability to jump in and out of character, right? To adjust to the situation that's presented before you. And then Victoria says, I love this. You cannot fake energy. Mm-hmm. It's like it can be created or destroyed, but you also got to have it, right? In order to use it and display it. So let's listen to Michelle Obama because I love this. And we'll come back and talk more about this imposter syndrome and why it even matters. Mm-hmm. Going back to Victoria's question, is it good, bad, or does it matter? Maybe we all just are going to live with it. But what's the risk of us not owning and dealing with imposter syndrome? And so we'll share that after I share this quick clip. I apologize in advance for those of you who are listening on audio or later, because this will be removed because of copyright, but we can play it live.
For minorities, you know, there's this feeling like because you've been told that you're not good enough, that when you're in a room, you're wondering, well, how did I get here if I've been told I'm not good enough? Women feel it oftentimes because society says you shouldn't be doing that, right? So you feel like an imposter in your own life. You feel like, especially if you've achieved success or you're in rooms that you're not supposed to be in because society has told you that, you think maybe somebody's going to discover that I shouldn't be here, right? That's imposter syndrome. Does that make sense?
It sure does.
So what I tell people is, okay, you know, and all I can do is tell you this, because imposter syndrome is, it's a thing in your head. And, you know, it's just like self-confidence. It's just like, you know, it's like any internal characteristic. Much of it is what you practice telling yourself, you know, and if you've heard that you're not good enough, that's what you're practicing. I'm just here to tell you, it is not true. You wouldn't be here. You wouldn't be doing what you're doing if you didn't belong here. And I also have the advantage of, and I say this not with any level of arrogance or lack of humility, but I have been at so many powerful tables now, right? I've been at, you know, I've worked in every sector. You know, I've been a lawyer at a big law firm. I've worked at an academic university, been associate dean. I've been the vice president in community development at a hospital. I've been, you know, run a nonprofit organization. I've worked in the government. I worked with the mayor in the city of Chicago. I worked in the Department of Planning and Development. I was First Lady of the United States of America. I've seen these seats. I've served on corporate boards. I've done it, not all, but I've done a lot. And I'm just telling you, there are a lot of people who don't belong there. And every table, I thought it was me. And after a little bit, I was like, nope, it's him. It's this guy who's sitting here talking,
but they all act the time. So well, they act like they
belong. That's because they've been told they belong there. They don't. But there's a presumption. That's what I'm saying. It's in his head too. He's like, I belong here. And I'm like, no, you don't. So all I can tell you is that the person sitting next to you was told, based on nothing, that he belongs there. And you were told that you weren't. Both things are wrong, oftentimes. So what I had to learn to do for myself was being, you know, age helps you with imposter syndrome. So I'm 55 now, and I've seen it. I've been waiting to be as bad as people told me I would be, you know? I've been waiting for when I was going to fall and mess up and fail. I've been waiting because that's what they said. I didn't belong at Princeton, right?
All right. I'll stop it there. It goes on probably another couple of minutes, but hopefully you all sort of see why I wanted to share that, right? That conversation and that other people belong somewhere that you don't. Mm-hmm. Right. And how often are we living in that, like, oh my gosh, I can't do this and I can't do that and that sort of thing. When I first got my first executive role as a chief nursing officer, so I got the role with confidence, right? I knew I could do the job, but then once I got in the job, I was like, oh my God, they put me here. I was like, shh, oh my God. At any moment they're gonna find out, like, what in the world? Like, why did we put this woman here? Yeah. Right. And that was how I was living for a time. Now, what's interesting, and Allie, you can also speak to that, I was doing the work.
Totally.
So it's not about truth.
No.
It's about feeling. right? So let me get you all to react to Michelle Obama. Let's go do a round robin and circle back to Ali. So Roz, your comments and reactions to what Michelle shared.
I know how she feels because when I was growing up and going into these different rooms like all of us have, you know, I used to be the only one. And you look around like, am I supposed to be here? You know, first of all, I'm the only Black person, so I felt like a raisinette. And and every time somebody would walk in the door, you're hoping it's going to be another Black person.
So that you're not the only one.
So I'm not the only one. And then, you know, I would always talk to my mother after, and the first thing she would ask me is, were you the only one? And I'm like, yes, ma'am. And it was a running joke because a lot of places my mother went, because she was breaking barriers, she was the only one. And so she said, there are going to be places where you go where you're the only one, and I want you to be prepared for that. But I was never prepared.
I was,
even though I heard her experiences, to actually walk in the room and be the only one. And, you know, I wasn't the only woman. I was the only, you know, maybe Black, Brown, Latino, you know, the whole gamut. But now when I walk in and I'm the only one, I'm like, yes, there's benefits in being Black.
Awesome. Thank you, Roz. But Ray, what about you and your reactions to that Michelle clip?
No, I can relate because I've been, you know, in position where you are in boards with, you know, very powerful people, and you sit down and just like Rose was saying, you're like, okay, when is the next person looking like me is going to be here? And, you know, and so I don't have to be the only one. And it can, and it's just yourself telling you all of this. And because sometimes those men didn't actually say anything to me. It's just me thinking that, no, I don't belong and I shouldn't be here. This success is too much for me. I have to go down again to be safe, you know. So it is an internal battle that you have to go through. And it's really funny because from a very young age, I've been basically the only one, but it keeps, you know, coming because I was actually at some point raised when I went to France, left my family to study. I was living with a white family, so I was always the only one. But this imposter syndrome, you know, was coming all the time. And I really had to work hard and have, you know, mentors and coaches to really get me out of it.
Yeah, I love that, Marae. And Ali, I think this is a perfect segue for you as you talk about not only your reaction to the clip, but why it matters. Like, why shouldn't we just brush imposter syndrome aside and just, you know, just like, oh, whatever, it doesn't really matter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I love the fact that she, you know, her Michelle Obama, right? And all the weight that she holds and her talking about. And I just love that how she said, neither is true. Mm-hmm. Right. It's not that they should be here and I shouldn't be here, or I should be here and they shouldn't be, right? Like, none of it is actually true. And that's so important because coming back to, like, it's all just what's happening inside. And I keep bringing it back to kind of animals because I have a puppy and I'm training him. So I'm learning a lot about myself through training a dog. But, you know, both of you said being the only one. And Roz, you said, you know, my mom tried to, you know, get me ready for that experience, but I wasn't ready. Of course, because you had never experienced what emotions were going to come up for you in that specific moment, right? And when we're the only one, whatever it is, the only woman or the only, whatever, just the only one in a group, what is happening inside of our bodies is a survival response. Mm-hmm. Like, think about being an animal, right? If I'm a dog and I walk into a room of bears, right? The dogs would be like, I don't know if this is the right room for me. Like, I might be in danger, right? Again, coming back to tribes, right? We all existed in tribes. If we were a different, you know, species or something different from the tribe, we would be the easiest one to throw away, right? You don't look like us. You don't seem like us. You could be thrown away. So it's not that, like, we're deficient in any way for having these feelings when we are the only one. It is actually entirely naturally human to feel that way, because your body is literally having a survival response to being the only one, right? Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Roz.
Ellie, I want to ask this question. And when I was feeling like the only one, I felt like I had to adjust to fit. I couldn't be myself.
Mm-hmm. Of course. Yeah. Because if you were yourself and you weren't accepted, well, now survival really might be in danger, right? Yeah. You might mm-hmm. actually be endangered. So let me do what they do. I'll mm-hmm. be safe that way, right? So we kind of chameleon in, and then imposter big time, right? So, okay, coming back to good, bad, should we care, why not, whatever. Well, I think there is no good and bad in the world. I think everything is a matter of preference, right? What I like to say about imposter syndrome is all about perspective. So my perspective about imposter syndrome is it's actually a fantastic thing, because if you are still having imposter syndrome type of thoughts, whatever scenario it is, right? There's many scenarios it can show up in. It is alerting you to the fact that you haven't fully come into yourself, right? You haven't fully healed what needs to be healed in order to know the truth of who you are, right? And so if you'll allow me, I'll just kind of give a brief history of how we're all imposters, okay? So I'm going to take us back to childhood for a really quick second, just to make what I just said make even more sense. So as babies, we have many needs, right? Food, you know, shelter, water, sure. But like higher than that, right? Higher on the hierarchy. The two main needs that we have is attachment, right? A connection to a parent. We would die literally if a parent did not take, or an adult at least did not take care of us. Whereas other species, like a giraffe, walks out of the womb. It just like starts walking, you know, it doesn't like, sure, it needs their mom, but it's not as necessary, right? Humans are literally useless without a human. So connection and attachment, survival need, right? Mm-hmm. The next need that we have is authenticity, meaning to be able to feel all of our feelings, right? To be able to just experience what it means to be a human at all times. But as every parent is just trying to do their best, which I 100% believe. And I believe that there's too much stress on parents with their jobs and all these things going on. There are times when your baby is either crying or expressing a feeling or need, and you're just like, I just need you to stop, right? You're just like, stop it. Or like, big girls don't cry. Or like, you know, you kind of try to get them to stop doing that or ignore them, right? There's all these parenting techniques of like how to get them to stop, you know, tantrums and all this kind of stuff. But in that moment, the child, like it, that makes sense. For adult to adult, I'm like, I get it, because there's so much going on in your life. You need this child to like behave, right? But then you need them to behave because you have too much going on in your life, right? You have no like threshold. Your stress level's so high that you're like, this child needs to behave better so that I don't have even more stress. And I say that because back in the day, a woman's job literally stopped when you had a baby. That was your only job. You did not have a career and a this and a side business and a side. You are a mother 24 hours a day. That is all you do, right? That's not the case anymore for women, right? So we have to, you know, sleep train them and do all of these things that actually kind of go against human instinct, right? If you're a gorilla and your baby gorilla is crying, do you think that mother gorilla is going to be like, if I just ignore that, my child, you'll be fine, right? No, the mother gorilla is going to immediately go to their child. But yet humans were like, just wait it out. They'll let, you know, they'll figure it out. And so, and again, this is just an adaptation to our current life, right? But what happens for the child is we don't know that mommy and daddy are stressed and they got stuff going on. We internalize the fact that they're telling us to be quiet or ignore us. We internalize that experience to say, it must be me. I must not be lovable enough, right? And crying and tantrums, those feelings aren't acceptable to be expressed in this family, right? And so let me suppress what I'm feeling and let me just be what mommy and daddy need me to be so that I can be loved and accepted, right? So I can get that connection and attachment. Wow. So we've learned at a really, really young age to suppress our feelings. And when we suppress our feelings, we suppress who we are. We suppress our authenticity, right? Meaning that all of us are really imposters because we're not actually being our truest selves because we've learned to suppress that true self for a very, very, very long time, right? So, you know, coming back to, you know, is it good or is it bad or meh? I think it's a great thing because if you are feeling imposter syndrome, to me, it's like it's your signal that like time is up, my friend. Like you've been suppressing your true self for far too long and it wants to come out, wow. Right? It's like being called to come out. And the second you start addressing the roots of your imposter syndrome, right? Some of the childhood stuff and the belief system that's on a loop in your mind, you can start to free yourself from imposter syndrome and free yourself from that inner critic and the self-doubt that keeps you kind of in these, you know, loops and these cycles and keeps you not advocating for yourself or feeling confident and not getting what you ultimately want. Because when you don't believe in yourself, then you'll self-sabotage to make that come true.
Wow. Well, Hallie, it really is maybe that if we're paying attention and if we heed the signs, it can be that signal for us and can be potentially a turning point for us, right? To sort of really step into, like you say, Marae, our greatness and mm-hmm. who we are destined to be. So, all right, so let's do this really quickly. I want to start to move into solutions. And what can people do? Because if this is true, that at least 70% of the people will experience imposter syndrome at some point, there's a lot of people out there who will go through this. And what do they do? So we're going to talk about what we can do in order to help ourselves get past that in a moment. Before we do that, let's do quickly our top two. So we like to ask a top two question, mix things up a little bit. And so today we're going to ask our top two questions so that you all can begin thinking about it. And we'll come back and get your responses. Today's top two question is your top two favorite breakfast meals. Like if you had your choice of breakfast meals, what is it that you really, really love? So we're going to do our top two after that. If you're out there in the audience, start thinking about breakfast. What would you want to have if you could absolutely have anything you want, your favorite breakfast meal? And we'll come back and get our panel's response right after this. Okay, so our top two favorite breakfast meals. Miss Roz, Roz is ready. Roz is like, all right, bring it on. I'm ready for this one. All right, go for it.
My top two, of course, I have to stay hydrated, which would be a mimosa. And then you got to stay hydrated, honey. And then the other one is a quiche. I love quiche.
Ooh. Do you make quiche at home?
Yes.
Okay. Huh. It's one thing, I actually enjoy quiche, but I never make them at home for some reason.
Yeah. Really? That's a critical answer for me. I did not expect quiche.
Yeah, I know. Well, I did not expect mimosas either, but.
Hydration.
All right. Okay, so Marae, what's your top two favorite breakfasts?
So for me, I like oats for breakfast with fruits and one, you know, orange juice with it. Fresh orange juice and also eggs. I like eggs as well and toast with the eggs. And I think that's there's a lot, but I think that's what I would go for.
See, awesome. Orange juice is in a mimosa. Orange juice and mimosa is together. Hydration.
Vitamin C.
Awesome. Ali, what about you?
Okay, so my first one would have to be anything with smoked salmon. Love smoked salmon. I just had it this morning, quite frankly. So I had a really good breakfast this morning. And then I'm going kind of like indulgent, right? I like oats too, but like that's like Monday through Friday.
Yeah.
I'm talking like if I'm going for breakfast. So yeah, anything smoked salmon Benedict, or you know, smoked salmon with cream cheese toast, eggs with smoked salmon, the whole thing. The second one, indulgent, would be banana walnut pancakes.
Banana walnut pancakes. Mm-hmm. Yum. That sounds delicious.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's see what. So Victoria says, OMG, American breakfast, the best meal ever. So Victoria, is that like eggs and bacon and toast and like, what's an American breakfast? And Michael says, two eggs over easy and avocado toast. Michael, you stole mine. I was going to go with the avocado toast as one of my, it has quickly become one of my favorites. And then there are different variations and different preparations. You can add the smoked salmon. You can have the eggs. You can, you know, do all of this. I love that one. So Regina says, breakfast cookies with cheese and butter cookies. All right. I'm confused. Maybe you didn't mean to say breakfast cookies. Cheese and butter and a good breakfast with a healthy sauce. All right. So Victoria said, don't forget the strong coffee. And she said, yep. So that was to the eggs and bacon and toast and that sort of thing. Okay. So my favorite, in addition to the avocado toast with the smoked salmon and the eggs, would have to be chicken fried steak, grits, and eggs. Mm. Like that's my, if I'm gonna be terrible and be bad, I'm going to do chicken fried steak and eggs. That is become one of my favorites. And, and don't forget the biscuits on the side. So, all right. So thank you all for playing along. So let's go back and start talking about some strategies for imposter syndrome. And Ali, I want to share your quote that you shared with us as we go into talking about, do you all have strategies like Roz and Marae? Are there specific strategies that you use? Because it might be that this still comes up periodically, right? That it, you know, comes up. So we'll talk about that. Let's share your quote first, Alex. Imposter syndrome thing going on, but here's where I'm going next. So Marae and Roz, Marae, you're unmiked already. What strategies would you recommend for helping people overcome imposter syndrome?
Yeah, I think that there's a self-awareness to know those triggers that, you know, trigger the imposter syndrome. I think that's one thing, know yourself when you know, you see it coming and you have those triggers. So you can adjust your thinking and your internal conversation and just be yourself basically and understand that, you know, it's okay. Whatever, you know, whatever is happening, whatever people think, it's not, you know, you're not responsible for that. You're responsible for what you think, for how, you know, you react, and that's all. And really have this boundary, telling yourself, whatever people think about me, it's none of my business. I will focus on myself. And really celebrate, you know, the moment where you when you have success, to really give you the positive energy that, you know, that actually gonna give you the self-confidence that you really belong, you really deserve what you have, and really talk about it.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Great, great strategies, Marae. Roz, what about you? What would you recommend?
I was writing it down, and I said, learn the facts, share my feelings, and share my failures, and do the inner work.
Hmm. Love that.
Yeah, I was like, basically, that's it.
Yeah. Yeah, and the facts are such an important part of this, right? Mm-hmm. Because most times when we're talking about that imposter syndrome, we are already doing it, right? We feel like we're imposters, and we feel like we're fake, but we're there doing the work. Mm-hmm. Right? And we're showing up every day and we're getting the accomplishments and the achievements. So those facts, I think, are important. Ali, give us some of your thoughts in terms of some strategies that people can use.
So, you know, coming back to the facts, what's so funny is every single one of my clients, you know, in the first call that I have to see if there's a fit, you know, they'll say like, that they don't feel like they're doing enough at work and like they might get fired and, you know, all of these things, and or they're not going to get promoted, whatever it might be. And I always ask them, have you gotten that feedback? You know, did someone tell you that like you're not doing good enough? And they were like, oh God, no, never. That they've never said that. And I was like, what are we talking about? right? So it coming back to like, it's in here. That's all that's happening, right? Mm-hmm. Roz, I think you summed it up very, very beautifully because, and I'll just give maybe like my spin on that, which is, and so did you, Mireille, awareness is where it starts. That's where I start with all of my clients. So really becoming acutely aware of the triggers, what you specifically say to yourself when you're triggered, you know, and get very clear on it, like write that stuff down, right? And get very clear specifically about the type of self-doubt, the type of self-sabotage that you have, right? So is your type of self-sabotage constantly staying busy, right? Like, okay, I just need to get busy, busy, busy so that I don't have to face the truth of who I am, right? Maybe your type of self-sabotage is always needing to be the best, right? Maybe your type of self-sabotage is needing to be perfect, right? So you don't send out it takes you 6 hours to write an email because it needs to be perfect and then you're behind and so on and so forth, right? There's different types of self-sabotage and they're all pointing us, they're all like a window into kind of the childhood experiences that we had that led us to that mental operating system, right? That mental self-sabotaging operating system. So get clear on who you know, which kind of self-sabotage you are, that awareness, what it says, when it's triggered. And then the second piece is to, by becoming aware, then you now have an opportunity to pause, right? It's like between the response and the reaction is, or, you know, the stimulus and the response, there's a pause, right? And so when you pause, you can then decide, am I going to believe this thought that just came up that's telling me that I'm not supposed to be here, or I'm not good enough? Or, well, let me check in with my facts, and do I know something else to be true, right? Is that thought that I'm not supposed to be here, and I'm going to, is that what I want to choose to believe today, right? Is that going to empower me today? Probably not. So what do I want to choose instead, right? So like, for women especially, this thought often comes up. Let's say you wake up in the morning and you're like, I feel fat and ugly today, right? That's a, you know, self-sabotaging thought, because what are you typically then going to do if you have that thought? You're probably going to put more makeup on. You're probably going to eat less, right? You're going to do these like things to try to make yourself feel better, right? But what if you could pause and say, wait a second, is that true? And even if, but not even is it true, do I want to believe that today? Like, what happens in my day if I start to believe that, right? I'm going to feel more insecure. I'm going to, you know, do all these things. What happens if I believe something different, right? So rewriting the thought, rewriting the script, because when you rewrite the thought, you will then start to act differently. And now your brain has new evidence to then start to rewire your brain, right?
Yeah.
If you always do the same thing, you're always going to have the same evidence and your brain's just going to keep those circuitries alive. But if you do something differently, now your brain has new evidence to say, when I don't beat myself up, good things happen, right? And now your brain is like, oh, let's wire that circuitry, right? So, and I want to be clear here too, that it's not, I'm not going to then go tell myself I'm the skinniest, most beautiful person that's ever walked in this world, right? Like, no one's going to believe, that's ridiculous, right? Like, it's superfluous, no one needs that. But the new thought is, I have a healthy body that is going to lead me through this day, right? Because isn't that true? Isn't that a fact? If you're alive and you're breathing, you must be healthy. If you're having that thought, you must be healthy in some way, right? To be alive. So, you know, it's not about affirmations or like positive messaging. It's actually coming back to Roz's point, to actually rewire your brain with the facts, right? The facts are, I actually already have this job. I don't need to prove that I need to, like, that I should keep this job. I already have this job, right? So on and so forth. There's so many other examples, but
yeah. Love that. Thank you so much. So much in there for us. And I've been trying to, after the show, sort of summarize all of the great takeaways and everything. And one piece that I was thinking about as I was preparing for the show, and I heard mentioned a couple of other places, is to name it, like have fun with it. Yes. Kind of give it a name. Like, who is that voice in your head? You know, is that negative Nancy? Is that the terrible Terry? Or like, give that person a name so that when he or she shows up, you begin to recognize and go, oh, Nancy, we're not doing this today, right? Exactly. And you can begin to really have some fun with it. I was listening to one person who said they named both of those alter egos, right? They named the one with the negative and they named their super. So Roz has her alter ego. Roz, what's her name?
I was waiting on you. Here's her name, Allie. You ready?
Yes.
Her name is Jaquita Alize Jenkins Johnson.
I feel like there's a good backstory here.
We'll talk later.
Yeah.
That is awesome. I love that. So we've got a couple of comments out here. So Mom said, there's an area of people with imposter syndrome that are children or adults who have been abused, and they're constantly attempting, you know, to hide and, you know, that appearance of being abused and that sort of thing. Yeah, Mom, we could probably do like a whole show on that, right? A whole different show.
Because that's like real trauma. That,
exactly. You know, that's really trauma. So Regina says, wonderful show. Never thought about the name imposter syndrome, but there's a lot of gold nuggets here and appreciate the episode. Amazing show today. Bernadette is out there. Hey, Bernie, great to see you. Good morning. My answer is no, but the part of myself that I don't want people who haven't already seen the side of me when I must protect myself, that's not a fraud. It's the life defending side where she can get very ugly trying to do so in a life-threatening situation. So you're saying that there are just parts of you that you hide because either number one, people don't deserve to be in that space, or number two, it's not a healthy space for you to be in all the time. So you don't want to be there. So thank you for sharing that. Victoria said, amazing conversation. Great to see everyone, especially Roz. Roz, see, you are missed, honey, when you are not here. Trust and believe. Okay, so let's do our coffee cup shots, and then we're going to do our wrap up. I can't believe the hour's almost gone already. So, got it. Thank you kindly. All right, so when we come back, we're going to do our quick wrap up. We're going to go to our co-hosts and get their final takeaways. And then we'll come to you, Allie, and get your final takeaway and also ask you how people can learn more about the work you do in the world and if there's anything else that you want to share as well. So let's do our quick little doodad here, and then we'll come back and do doodads, and then we'll come back and do our takeaways. All right. So what's in your cup? This final segment is about what you're leaving with, what we put in your cup today. Hopefully we filled your cup with something wonderful and beautiful, food for thought, and something that is informational and that will help you move your life forward. So Marae, let's start with you first. What's in your cup that you're taking away today?
So the what's in my cup is the, you know, sticking to the fact and rewiring our thought to, you know, to get rid of the imposter syndrome. I think that's the strong one for me.
Mm-hmm. I love that, right? The facts speak for themselves. Mm-hmm. These feelings are not facts, right?
Yeah.
They're just feelings. So I love that one too. Thank you, Marae. Roz, what's in your cup?
The piece with Michelle Obama said, what do you practice telling yourself? Mm-hmm. What do you practice telling yourself? And that right there is something that I'm going to, it was an impact that I'm going to implement.
Awesome. Wonderful. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Roz. And Allie, what are you hoping people take away that we've put in their cup in this conversation today?
Oh, I thought you were going to ask for my takeaway. I was going to say, because I was going to say when Michelle Obama said, we talked about how, you know, we feel that way because we've been told that way, and they feel that way because they've been told that way. Right. And I often think about, you know, how, you know, because I say something and I'm a woman, how it might be received differently than if my partner, you know, a white man, he's actually an Arab man, but, you know, he looks white enough. If he said it, like, how would that be received? Like, it would, you know, I don't know, but I'm just saying there might be a difference. So what I hope people take away. Okay, I hope people take away that, you know, imposter syndrome is, it's not a bad or a good thing or a math thing. It's something that you really can use and leverage to get what you want in life, right? Mm-hmm. I think everyone wants to feel confident, right? That's a really nice feeling. It makes us feel safe and content and happy. And imposter syndrome typically robs us of that, right? And so I hope they take imposter syndrome, their feelings of imposter syndrome, as a hopeful sign that there's something that they can do to not feel that way and that they can get out of their own way. That's my biggest mission in life. And what I'm so passionate about is helping people get out of their own way. It pains me beyond belief to see people be the reason in, you know, the thing stopping them from being mm-hmm. who they want and getting what they want. And oftentimes imposter syndrome is that thing, right? Which is why I focused on it. So I hope they take away that they can do something and they should take it as a good thing.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. And how can people learn where to find you or connect with you and learn more about the work that you do?
Yeah. So I hang out most on LinkedIn. So I'm Ali Rizakos-imposter syndrome coach on LinkedIn. There you'll find my website, which is alirizakos.com. And you'll also find my free masterclass that if you liked what we talked about today, I go in way more depth and give some more kind of takeaways and what you can do about it. And I also kind of offer a little gift at the end of my masterclass as well. And so you can find that on my website at alirizakos.com or on my LinkedIn. It's one of the first featured links.
Okay, awesome. And Ali, if you would send me the link to your masterclass,
yep.
we'll share that, and then we'll post that in the show notes also so that we can make sure that you're sharing that with others. So I think this has been a wonderful conversation. I'm hoping that everyone took something away from it. You know, as I think about sort of my last thoughts on this, I think my last drop is imposter syndrome can cause us anxiety, low self-esteem, fear of failure, overworking. It matters, right? It matters if you can use it as a launching point, but it also matters if it holds you back, right? Mm-hmm. Are you afraid to apply for that job? Are you afraid to go for the big contract? Are you afraid to do these things because you're feeling like an imposter? So fight the feelings with facts. And as we all talked about today, you're not alone in this. You don't have to be alone. Get help, get support, get a mentor, get a coach. Talk to others about these feelings because there is a real power in that, right? That we're leveraging and doing things together. So I think just thank you everyone for contributing to the conversation. Thank you guests for the comments. Like, you all rock, you power our conversation and keep us going. And so we're actually gonna go over to the backstage and just do a quick debrief about this. So if you are a member of Coffee with Rhonda Tribe on Facebook, it's a free group, just search Coffee with Rhonda Show Tribe and you can join the Facebook group. And then you get all of our backstage conversation recordings. So you get to see those if you're in that group. So thanks everyone for being here. For my co-host, amazing co-host, great to see you all. Love you both so much. Next week's show, I will actually be, where will I be next week? I'm actually headed to the airport as soon as I'm done this, and I will be in Phoenix for next week's show. I'll be in Phoenix for that. So looking forward to seeing everybody next week, same time, same station. Until then, continue just to be amazing, right? What is that? Continue to be awesome today and every day. And then we will see you all back here next week. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Thank you.